The following original talk show is rated NU. No usury abuses tolerated. Some content may be offensive to term life insurance plan owners. Chestertonian discretion is advised.
Getting a little bit of a late start, but you know what? I'll get bumped for that international population conference anytime. Population control conference. Have you guys been listening to that thing? I think you need to get out there and check it out, huh? I mean, it is a powerhouse of speakers, unbelievable information, and sadly, as we've seen so much in recent history, treachery at the highest places. I almost feel guilty talking about money today. I'm going to go to this very minor subject about called finance when there's people dying or not being born or put out of existence all across the globe supposedly to fight poverty and environmental concerns or God only knows what else. Well, I'm going to move on into finance. Hello, everyone. Welcome to True Money Show. I am David Simpson live today on October 18th, a short 5 days after the 100th anniversary of Miracle of the Sun, which I read to you last week. This is the Veritas Radio Network. I am exclusively on the Crusade Channel, Bulldog Kia Studio, coming to you every day from 3 to 5 now in the drive time. That's nice, isn't it? And I got a lot to cover today. Like I said, if you haven't been listening to the International Conference on Population Control, you know, sadly that name sounds almost like we're endorsing it. I think it was to draw attention to the issue. It's not an endorsement of population control. It's a concerted condemnation of the evils going on under that moniker. So I got another day of it tomorrow. Tune in and learn something about what's going on. And then, of course, like I said, it's not good enough for us just to know all these things, guys. We got to know things, and then we got to get active in doing stuff about it. And, you know, if we're short on solutions, there's always one solution. There's always one solution ready-made for us. Focus on the eternal. Say your prayers and beg God's mercy for the evils done in the name of the church or in his name and in the name of all kind of wonderful-sounding things that aren't so wonderful after all. On the True Money Show today, if you'd like to call in and offer your opinions on anything, ask me a question, answer my financial question today. It's always very simple, 844-527-8723. I have my email open, and I will give you that email address for two reasons. One, you may correspond with me that way. I will say there's a lag sometimes, and I don't always get emails that people are trying to send me during the show. So the easiest way is to call. But if you'd like to email me, David at tffco.com. That's David at tomfrankfrankcharlesoscar.com. So you can email me your questions or comments. If you also would like to be on my list, my distribution list, I send out an email before all my live shows because some days I cannot get in here to do the show. And if you'd like to know when my live shows are, then just email me and say, Dave, put me on the list, and you will start getting announcements of my live shows as well. You know, the interesting thing about following the International Population Control Conference is that, one, it puts money very much in perspective, like a lot less important than life, wouldn't you say? But also, it brings up the topic of poverty, which is kind of one of the moving, I would say, almost fake forces behind all this stuff. They say, oh, if we had less people, we wouldn't have poverty. You're never going to get rid of poverty because poverty is a relational issue, meaning if everyone had money, there's always be someone with less than someone else. That would be relatively in poverty if you killed those five people, let's say at the bottom of the financial paradigm, then you just the next five would then be the ones in relative poverty compared to the ones that have more. It's not something you can eradicate. Our Lord said, "The poor you will always have with you." I wonder why he would say such a thing unless it were true. All the efforts to eradicate it, however highfalutin they may sound, are always fallacious. And there's just no way around that. But it does bring up the topic of money in a peripheral sense. So we're going to be talking today on the show. Actually, my financial question today, has the Federal Reserve ever printed money? I have an article, a guy arguing very vehemently that the Fed has never printed money. And, of course, it ends up being a semantic issue. But I'd like to ask the question to you out there, all my listening audience, has the Fed ever printed money? We're going to discuss an article of a guy who says the Fed has never printed money. OPEC. Anybody remember OPEC from back in the day? The oil-producing economies of the Middle East all congregated and cartelized themselves. We're going to talk about OPEC and other cartels and see what your thoughts are on them. I'm going to do my final installment. I thought last week was my final installment, but I'm going to do one more installment on what is true money, because I'm going to talk about several other characteristics that were offered as characteristics of money. I want to analyze those. They only got one vote out of my informal panel of five experts. But I want to talk about each one and see, just kind of weigh whether we think those other eight contenders for characteristics of money should actually be part of our definition of money. Because we are trying to find what is true money here on the True Money Show. I have a few listener emails. One of them made me cry. I will say it on the air. I cried yesterday, just moved by the power of this medium and moved by the influence that that this network, this crusade has done. It has caused, we're seeing more and more conversions. We're seeing more and more rededications to the fight. We're seeing people who have kind of dropped out, getting back in and saying, no, this is important. We got to get this done. That kind of stuff just charges me up, and it charges Mike up. And, even when things aren't going so well, it gives us energy. And I just wanted to share some of those with you. And also an email from a guy from last week who was correcting a little bit. I didn't mean to misinterpret his email, but I think I did, and I want to make that correction. Finally, I've got the three traits of 100-bagger investments, so, three traits of investments that can increase 100-fold, 100 times your money. That's probably pretty important, right? So I've already asked the financial question today, has the Fed ever printed money? So let's go ahead and jump right into that old financial weather report. What do you say? That's a good song for today, don't you think? We got the gloom, despair, agony, maybe, but in that uppity little song, kind of makes you feel better about everything, even though things go into pot. So I am looking at the market numbers. This looks like it's about 10 minutes before. No, this is post-market close, I think. Okay, so it should be, anyway. My numbers might be lagging a little bit. Let's see what they say here. The Dow Jones, my gosh, that thing is up there. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 23,154.32. I actually saw an article today, somebody saying Dow 1 million. I think if the Dow gets to 1 million, if the Dow gets to 1 million, there's already something wrong. I've been telling you what's wrong on this show for 2 years now, but no one's listening to me. I'm a little nobody. But if Dow gets to 1 million, there's really something wrong. It's up $156.88 today, or 0.68%. Dow 1 million. Yeah, Mike, that's what they're claiming now. They're saying Dow 1 million. Well, I mean, if you Why not? If you think about it, if it's $23,000, if it grows at 10% this year, that's $2,300. It's going to go up right there. So, you know, and then it's going to have this radical growth phase as it gets larger and larger. So, you know, I guess I remember a long time ago somebody was telling, saying Dow 10,000. And they were, oh, no way. Well, that was 2.5 times that. Dow is up 0.68% today. The S&P 500, trailing right along with that, is up $2.05. And that's actually kind of flat. It's up 0.08%. The Russell 2500, which is a small and mid-cap index that I look at, that is up $2.40 or 0.41%, about half a point. The EAFE index, our foreign developed markets, those are up not quite 19 cents, a quarter of a point, 0.27%. And then the emerging markets, the symbol for this new, I haven't been giving this one out until very recently. The symbol for this indice, it's actually an ETF, EEM, Echo Echo Mike. It's up 13 cents or 0.28%. So everyone up a quarter point or more, except for the S&P up a measly maybe tenth of a point. Finally, the Ag Index, this is the Barclays Aggregate Bond, a good, you know, broad-based bond market indice. That's down 17 cents. It sits at 109.53 or almost 54, down 0.16%. You know, so I don't give stock tips. I don't even believe in stock tips, really. That's not true. Let me rephrase that. What I believe is that if you are going to manage your own finance, you can certainly become a stock picker. And there's nothing wrong with that. Matter of fact, in some ways, you might have better. You know, you've always heard diversify, be very broad in your investments, put a lot. Well, that's not really true in all circumstances. In some cases, some people say don't put all your eggs in one basket, and that's good advice to some people. And some people will say put all your eggs in one basket and then watch the basket very closely. Now, it just depends on who you are and what you're trying to do. So some people can be stock pickers. I have no problem with that at all. If you're willing to spend the time to do the research, analyze the markets you're investing in, analyze the stocks that you want to pick or the bonds or whatever else that you're looking at, and then make those calls and follow those calls and have exit points, entry points, and all the things that go along. If you want to look into things like this, you know, there's a whole series of books, Stock Market Wizards, people giving the way they went about picking stocks. Now, what am I talking about here? Well, if you aren't going to do that, the counter argument is, hey, invest in a broad base of things. Don't put all your eggs in one basket would be that moniker. And then, you know, some things are going up, some things are going down. Some people call this buy and hold. I don't really like the name because I don't do buy and hold. I actually try to invest with trends. I don't want – see, I'm investing more than one person's money, more than my own money. So I like to – I can't pick individual stocks for every individual portfolio and have a handful of those that I watch all the time. I just can't do it. There's too many accounts, too much money, and not enough time for me to do that kind of calls. Plus, people's differing, varying risk profiles. So I choose a different method. Now, it's not the buy and hold method because I don't really believe in that. I'm not saying you can never make money that way. I'm just going to give you an example on how it doesn't always work. And how it even can work better if you do individual stock selection. So I guess ideally, someone should manage their own money and really pick their own investments and track those investments very, very seriously. Most people just won't do that, and therefore they default to an advisor. And then the question becomes, what kind of advisor do you want? So anyway, back to the point. So if you're going to broadly diversify, I say you should pick trending winners, if that makes any sense. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to find markets that are moving positively, invest in them until they kind of stagger and slow down and find another trend and jump on that. That's pretty much my investment strategy. I use a service, investment service, tells me when to buy, sell, and hold. And then I do have certain stocks that I'm watching that I put in some people's portfolios if they let me. And that's pretty much me doing analysis of a set group of kind of my own basket of investments. And I watch that and make the judgment calls as to when to buy and sell and hold. Okay. Well, all that being said, it's kind of a prelude to this story. The 100 baggers. How do you get a 100-bagger investment? How do you find a 100-bagger, an investment that increases 100 times? Well, interesting article from the Casey Research guys. This one was written by Chris Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R. He's the editor of the Chris Mayer's Focus. He says this, and I think it's an important question. He says, there's one question I get from readers over and over again. Why invest in stocks if the world is going to pot? You know, that's a good question. I mean, we kind of ask that question a lot here on the True Money Show. If you'd like to ask a question to the True Money Show, what a segue, huh? If you'd like to ask the money to True, if you'd like to ask a question to True Money Show, 844-527-8723. Well, he went about researching, and I want to tell you how much money he spent researching. This is why I'm saying not everyone's really made to pick their own stocks. He said he found some 100-baggers. Those are stocks that returned 100 to 1. He spent 3 years and $138,000 investigating them, and he discovered that all of them had certain aspects in common. Well, that's an interesting study, right? Now, I don't have 3 years and $138,000 to spend on that kind of stuff, so I didn't do that research, but he did. Now, he says, if you just look at broad market stuff, he says the S&P 500 CAPE ratio, that's the basically stock valuation measure designed to smooth out earnings volatility, so kind of how much the market is really worth absent any odd ups and downs, okay? He says, has never been this high except for one other time right before the dot-com crash of 2000. So in other words, stocks are very expensive if you look at the S&P 500 as a whole or in the CAPE ratio, C-A-P-E. He says, however, there have been times when even with the stock market being high or even with the stock market being flat, you can still find winners inside that market. Now, here's what he did. He went to an historical example, 1966 to 1982. It was a 17-year stretch, and stocks, if you go look at the charts, were dead. There was just supposedly no money to make in stocks. But his research found that during that same 17-year period, there were 187 stocks you could have bought between 1966 and 1992 that would have multiplied your money 100 times. He said, in fact, during that 17-year stretch, you'd have had at least a dozen opportunities each month to multiply your money 100 times if you just held on. He gave three examples. I won't go through all the examples. However, I'll mention their names. It was H&R Block, Southwest Airlines, and then a company that's the holder of Victoria's Secret, I think, was the third one. He said, so indices can tell you what kind of environment you're in, but they don't predict what will happen to individual stocks. He says, so, but don't fret so much with guesses as to where the stock market might go. Now, I'm guilty of doing this. I do this all the time on the True Money Show, where I say, market's high, looks like it's ripe for a downturn. By the way, the last few, two months I've been saying this, the market keeps going higher. So even with the market being high, you can be wrong. Even with it's expensive as a general rule, you can be wrong. So I do think we need to sometimes watch our emotional component. Don't go, oh, market's high, gotta be ready for a downfall, so I'm gonna get out. That's probably not the best analysis because we know markets can go opposite of our feelings or our general sentiment about something. Still, I have to ask the question, if I were to ask this question, this guy a question, how is the average person supposed to find the 100-bagger? Right? Okay, so he's saying don't look at the general index. Don't get all worried about the market as a general thing. Go try to find those good 100-bagger investments inside. How is the average person supposed to pick them? Now, he does give three characteristics to look for. I still don't know if that's adequate because I have found what I consider to be very good stocks fundamentally that didn't turn out to be that great of investments. So I prefer an intermediate approach where I try to pick the guys who were finding the winners, at least the winners that are trending right now, and then I ride them because these guys have huge research firms that I don't have. But if I were an individual investor and could invest the time in my own money, I don't think this guy's advice is too bad. And here's his advice. Here's where you can find the winners. So he says, first of all, you're looking for small companies. Why? Because it's hard for Coca-Cola or McDonald's, which already has this huge mega cap industry, to really improve their output. He gave an example. He says, McDonald's did about $25 billion in sales last year. So if it wants to double that number, it would need to sell an extra 5 billion Big Macs. Who thinks they're really going to do that, right? So he says it's a matter of scale. When the companies get so big, it's very difficult for them to really rev up earnings in a proportional manner. Now, by the way, I thought that was very interesting that one of the things that we say about society here at the True Money Show and also at Mike Church Show and everywhere else is that one of the reasons society gets abusive is it gets out of scale. Apparently, big companies have the same type of problem. And if we brought scale back to markets, maybe it would improve the market as a whole. So what are his three characteristics that he's looking for? And this will finish up my financial weather report. He says, remember, you're not trying to buy the market. You're buying individual stocks. Well, that's not true for most investors. I know lots of investors who are index investors. They are buying the market. And in some cases, better beware because the market is extremely expensive and seems ripe for a downturn. But he says, if you're buying individual stocks, here's what you're looking for. He says, look for great small cap stocks with these traits. And the traits are these. First, room to grow. He says, look for a regional businesses that are growing and dominating a market or have new innovations. Don't try to find the national, international company now. Try to find the regional company. So the best example of that would have been Southwest Airlines that was just flying out of Dallas's airport, Love Airport, right? But they had a new concept. They were challenging the big boys, having regional success, and then they expanded nationwide. Number two. So after room to grow, you have number two. Look for high return on equity. ROE is what you're looking for. You can actually do a stock screener for this. So you go into your favorite stock, you know, picking program or whatever your trade platform is and ask, find the stock screener and say ROE. Look for ROE, return on equity. He says a high return on equity is a good indicator that the company is able to produce money and make returns on their investments. He says 20% or more. He says in most of the examples he gave, they were earning 25% or 30% return on equity. I will say this one thing he did mention in the article, in the cautionary tale. They might have high returns on equity, but a very large debt load as well. Watch out for debt-laced companies. They can have all kinds of strange positive numbers like return on equity you're looking for, but really be in trouble because they're not able to manage their finances very well. So if you find a high debt company, that can be problematic sometimes. Number three, so a room to grow company, a regional company maybe that's dominating the market or innovating, a high return on equity. And he says, finally, look for companies who can reinvest those earnings that they have, those profits, and earn high return equity again. He gave an example that if someone were able to earn like a 25 or 30% return on equity and reinvest that and do it again, in 18 years, you could turn $10,000 into $1 million. So there you go. There's three traits of 100 bagger investments, and that is your financial weather report today from the True Money Show.
Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Deep, dark depression, excessive misery.
Welcome back. Okay, you are listening to The True Money Show. I am David Simpson. I am your host every day from 3 to 5 of The True Money Show on the Crusade Channel, king-size truth radio-size speakers. I come to you from the Bulldog Kia studio, and I have to say that you walk in the front door and you come into the, I don't know, I guess you'd call that the inventory room, where Mike's got a whole bunch of books. And then you come into the studio, Studio A for Alpha King Dude Dog, that's where he gets to reside and broadcast his wares. Then you come into another studio where young Christopher sits, and there's a huge amount of machinery and equipment and telephones and all that kind of good stuff. Then you go further back, you get into kind of another inventory room and a little kitchenette where you know, Maggie O'Connell sits and makes sure all the sales go out where the way they're supposed to come out. And then you turn the corner and you come into my studio, Studio D, and it's my own little fishbowl. Well, what's my point? Well, When I came in here, the lights were all on. The computers were all on. Young Christopher was at his desk working. Mike's at his desk working. The Three Stooges are standing there smiling and saying, hey, is anybody called in today? 844-527-8723. They're asking those questions, and we see banners. And I guess the short of this thing is that I believe it takes money to run this company. I don't know, but I'd be willing to bet that it won't be very long before the landlord comes in and says, hey, I must have the rent.
I can't pay the rent.
I must have the rent.
I can't pay the rent.
You ever remember, what was that? What was that from? Where was that? That was, I don't remember where that was from, but I remember that little cartoon where the guy was trying to beat up on the girl because she couldn't pay her rent, and I think Popeye, maybe it was Popeye, maybe Popeye comes and punches him out. Well, we don't want anybody to come in here and demand the rent from Mike and him go, you know, I just don't really have it anymore. So, I'm asking you to do some simple little things like, I don't know, contribute to the Veritas Radio Network Crusade channel. Now, I know everybody listening already does. They go, Dave, I'm a monthly member. I go to the on-demand store and I buy downloads and I've told people about it and I've got the app on my phone. Okay. Well, just do one more little thing. Go to the store, buy a book for your best friend and say, here's a book from a guy that works at the Crusade channel. I thought you might like it. Let's talk about it when you're finished. Let's go have lunch next week. After you finish the book, we'll talk about it. Now, why would I bring up a book? Well, I had two emails from clients. Not clients, I should say that. From listeners. I'm going to start with the one that made me cry yesterday. Now, I'm not going to read you the whole email. And please know that this is not me trying to brag on myself. My goodness gracious. As a matter of fact, when he wrote me this beautiful email, I wrote him back. I said, hey, all glory and honor to God. I truly, my goodness, it can't possibly be the goodness of David Simpson that caused these things. This is not where it's coming from. But I wanted to read the email because it was very moving to me, but more importantly, because I have to say, if you get emails like this about this company, there must be something right. Look, I know that we got lots of things wrong. I know we still got a lot of growing to do. I know we still have a lot of work to take care of. I know we still have a lot of improvements to do on the website. And I get it, you know. But what we're broadcasting, apparently, is top-notch stuff that's making a difference. And here's the proof and why I think you got to go buy a book from our store and send one along to a friend. You ready? I do not have the words to express to you what you, along with Mike and Brother Andre, have done for me. You've impacted my life in a way that I didn't think was possible. And he skips down. I'm going to skip down a little bit. He says, in my experience, well, he says, you've asked the question, David, what is money? Well, in my experience, money is what I always looked for. It was a thing I could never get enough of, but never seemed to accumulate. It's what I thought could get anything, but it was usually the thing that prevented me from doing the things that really matter and should have been the most important. Thanks to you, I no longer seek or even care about money. I seek wealth. Retirement is not a fantasy that I buy into. I like to think of it as the point in my life when I stop turning wrenches and start tilling dirt full time. Well, God bless you. Buying your book was something that I put off for a while. I guess because I knew you would tell me what I wanted to hear and make it real. So I purchased the book and let it sit at my table for a few weeks. Yes, I know I can be hard-headed. But I did get the courage and started reading. I got halfway through the lesson one and had to stop. I asked my lovely wife to read the few pages I had just read, and together we finished the book. Throughout the book, I kept laughing, and she kept saying, isn't that what you always say? You've explained many things in a way that simplified everything. Again, thank you. Now, it goes on, and he asked me some questions, and he mentions his desiring of homeschooling his kid. And of course, I wrote him back and I lauded him for the choice to homeschool and thanked him for the wonderful kind words he said and let him know that he moved me to, you know, in appreciation that it gave me the courage and the inspiration to soldier on. And in other words, this really is a family affair over here. By the way, his email was titled A New Friendship. He says, I'm writing this more to just be friends, which is what I hope we all are. Well, if the True Money Show or Financial Sanity and Three Easy Lessons, which is in my book, which is in the Founders Trading Post, if this show or that book or Mike's show or Brother Andre's show, all the people he mentioned, Mike and Brother Andre, and if we can make that much difference in this young man's life, not us, but the message, the desire, the search for truth, the willingness and the want to make this a better world, isn't it worth supporting any way you can think of? And so whether it's my book that you go buy or whether it's Humility of Heart or any of the other titles that Mike has in the bookstore, I'm serious. Seriously consider purchasing one of these for a friend and passing it along. We're just trying to find bigger, more and more markets where we can make this kind of difference. And we hope in doing so that we change communities across our country and eventually change the course and the sad course that we're on. All right, that's my commercial for The True Money Show and for my book and for a few other things around here. I hope you guys were as moved by that as I was. And thank you, Al. His name is Albert. Albert, thank you for the really one of the kindest things ever said to me and making this old man feel young again. 844-527-8723 is the way you can call in. You can email me, David@tffco.com. I wanted to read one more email before I go to my next topic. We're going to finish my series on what is true money. You can answer the financial question of the day, which is, has the Fed ever printed money? I'm going to offer you, for your consideration, an argument from a man who wrote an article saying they have never printed money, by God. And you can phone in and tell me how you think the guy's all wet or how you completely agree with him or somewhere in between. Let's go to this second email, though. Last week, I was talking about what is true money, but I added to the question, how would you like to be paid? And because I thought, hey, if you really considered how you wanted to be paid, what in what commodity you might like your remuneration in, that maybe you would say, well, that's probably what true money is, because that's what I want. Well, Michael had written something about being paid in commodities. He said the commodity he most cherishes is time. And he went on, and like I said, he says in the follow-up email that he maybe inarticulated his was being a little inarticulate in his description. I kind of went off on a little tangent there and talked about how I don't really care for time being treated as an economic commodity because it sometimes abuses people. But that's all water under the bridge. I wanted to bring up his clarification to me because I thought it was such a beautiful commentary. So, Michael, thank you for this email. He says, thank you for your kind words. The point that I was trying to make but failed to articulate was the actual value of time rather than the value of money. Few people really think about the fact that the reason that we are forced to toil and to deal with mortality is a direct result of our sinful nature as a result of the fall. Part of our punishment is that we are now, quote, on the clock, close quote. As I have aged, I have an appreciation for the fact that my grandfather would ask to be repaid in time whenever he helped us with anything. I have taken to asking the same of my kids in the hopes that it would give them a greater appreciation for the value of the time that they ask of others, as well as to give them a healthy value of their own time. Thanks again, and God bless. Michael. So I wrote Michael back. I said, oh, I completely agree with that. I mean, I didn't mean to misconstrue your earlier statement either. You know, time and eternity. There was a saint who said, oh, if only they would meditate on eternity. Because we have an end, and our end will be either eternal blessedness or eternal damnation. Eternal is in both of them. And the saint was saying, oh, if only they would meditate on eternity and saw the shortness, the quickness, the passing nature of what we call time, our temporal lives. And Michael was giving me edification, reminding me the important nature of that. And like I said, I completely agree with him. And I said, and I wish, I even added that to my email response to him, I certainly hope that as they grow in appreciation of time and time spent with their loved ones and time spent with daddy and time spent on their job for their friend or time spent with their children, etc. I said, I hope that they then take that appreciation of time and grow it into an appreciation of eternity. Boy, we don't think about these things enough at all. You're listening to The True Money Show. I am your host, David Simpson. I come to you every day from 3 to 5 here on the Crusade Channel, the Veritas Radio Network, King Size Truth, from radio size speakers. I have my voice, but young Michele Ecclesia does not. And boy, what a day to get hit with laryngitis, or actually a couple of days. So y'all say a prayer for my good buddy Mike, and hope that his voice comes into full force again tomorrow as he drinks his honey and salt water and I don't know. Have you tried Tang yet? Have you tried Tang? He hasn't tried. I don't know if he's tried. He's going to try to give us a little voice. You ought to rest your vocal.
Screw that. You remember? See, it's already coming back. You know why? That shows you it's diabolical because I don't have to perform. Oh, okay, you can have it back now. Remember Father Jambon at the little chapel on Fish Hatchery Road?
Yeah, yeah.
Did the Epiphany Mass.
Yeah, the water
bus. We all got blessed boxes of salt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And water.
I still got some.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah.
And I got water.
There you go.
Oh, tomorrow morning, it's on like Donkey Kong, Baphomet. Bring it.
Look,
bring it.
You need to stop. You need to stop talking to the demons and challenging them because they. That's not a good game to play. You just tell God, hey, God bless me, God bless me, God bless me, God bless me. Focus on
I've done that 100,000 times a day, too.
Yes. Stay with him and forget about everybody else.
I'm bringing St. Benedict's salt. It's on.
There you go. All right. Well, I told you, you can hear the little strain in his voice, poor little guy. And then, but he would be a great Peter Brady right now. When it's time to change, and it's time to change. Nobody ever remembers that reference. I remember that show. I don't know why. That one was like indelibly marked on my brain. And Peter was trying to sing and his voice was changing. And every time he'd go to hit a note, it would go all south. And it was a pretty funny little show. Okay. What was I going to do? Oh, yes. I know what I was going to do. I was going to tell you about the financial question today was, has the Fed ever printed money? We're going to get to OPEC and other cartels. I have a, by the way, that's going to be in my, this day in money history. If I have time, I'll get to a topic I missed a week or so ago on which accounts to spend down in retirement, but I may not be able to get to that because I do want to finish up. And young Christopher, this is the third episode of What is True Money? So you can take this episode into my last two and maybe cut those out and put that in as a special feature, which is What is True Money? Now, as you all know, Mike and I are amateur philosophers over here, and we attempt to... I don't know, what would you call it? Screw our heads on the right way. Make sure we're engaging reality. Make sure that we're thinking about things and then going external of our own noggins and proving it out on the ground, if you will. That's, in other words, that's testing theories, not just staying subjective. And one of the things you do in philosophy is you learn logic. And one of the things about logic that you learn is that you have to define your terms. Terms are, well, I don't want to get all philosophical. We're not going to get to a philosophy course today. I'm just going to say that terms are very important to be clear in your mind. If you don't have clear terms, you cannot have clear thinking. If you don't have clear thinking, you can't have clear communication. And on it goes from there. All right. So I spent the last two shows asking the question, what is true money? And we came up with eight characteristics. Now, this doesn't define what money is. This tells you how to identify money, right? But what money is a medium of exchange and a storehouse of value. That's what money is. It helps to facilitate exchange by storing value in an intermediate form until the exchanges can be completed. Okay? Simple, real simple. Let's go through one example. A duck and a guy's got a cow and they go, hey, you want to trade? Nah, the cow's worth more than the duck. I really don't really want to trade you a whole cow for a duck and I can't cut my cow into steaks. So really don't have a way to break it. And the guy goes, well, a half silver coin that's maybe worth the duck's value. And the guy goes, yeah, I have a silver coin. Here you go. And so he gives him a silver coin. The duck vendor gives him the duck and off he goes with the cow and the duck. All right. But what does a guy with a silver coin do? What is that silver coin's purpose? It's holding the value of the duck for the man until he can find someone else that he wants to trade with. And if that coin is universally accepted, it will then facilitate the next exchange for value, right? That's what we call a medium of exchange. By the way, we learn what media are in philosophy as well, because an idea is a media. An idea and a term is a medium of knowledge. All right. But now we're not looking at what money is by definition. We're saying, well, okay, we have the definition in our head, but how do we recognize it when we see it? And we came up with 8 characteristics. Now, not all of them were universally agreed upon. I had an informal panel of 5 quote-unquote experts. Really, were just 5 things I found on the internet. But they fit well enough with my own knowledge and my own research to expand upon the idea. And these were the characteristics we came up with in the last 2 episodes. Durability. This is related to another characteristic called stable value. But we wouldn't trade in money if it could lose its value once we took it. It was durable, or it could be destroyed very easily once we took it. So if you, instead of trading that silver coin in my example, if the guy gave him, I don't know, maybe a tomato, right, and for the duck, and the tomato then rots on the way home, or it had a worm in it, and the worm ate up the tomato while he was on his way home, that wouldn't be very good money, because now that medium of exchange, that thing he was going to use to trade with someone else, just got destroyed because it wasn't durable. So we see the value of durability in money. Portable. Well, that kind of goes, we can use the example again, the cow really wasn't very portable. I mean, the guy was dragging him around behind him. But when you want to go to market, when you want to go to a place where you do trades, you want to have something that's very easy to carry, both there and back, if you can. So portability, ease of use, ease of going to the market is another characteristic. General acceptance, this kind of goes more to the essence of money. In other words, if no one would have taken that silver coin for trade, then it wouldn't have been very good money. But for some reason, we've always liked coins. We've always liked silver and gold as a storehouse of value. And so it does have general acceptance, generally, right? But it's the willingness for people to use. This is what general acceptance is, this, the willingness of people to use that thing, whatever it is, as a medium of exchange. So durability, portability, general acceptance. The 4th major characteristic of money was divisibility. This increases the utility of something as a medium. The value of divisibility is if you can cut it up into small pieces, then just like the cow, you know how the cow had that one value? Let's say a cow is worth $600, right? But you can't cut off his hoof and say, here's a dollar of the cow. It doesn't work that way. He wouldn't be a good cow anymore, or she wouldn't be a good cow anymore. Be a lame cow. Well, good money is something you can cut up without harming the thing and to smaller pieces, and to make it more negotiable, make it have the value split up into many pieces to take on more exchanges of lesser value. Divisibility is our 4th characteristic. So we have durability, portability, general acceptance, divisibility. On the True Money Show, we added 4 more. The second version, we added 4 more characteristics. Stable value. Remember, we want something that doesn't lose its value as you're going through time. That's very similar to durability, but not exactly the same. The 6th characteristic was cognizability, or recognizable. This kind of sounds like general acceptance, but not exactly, but similar. It's something that everyone would recognize as having value in the thing. They recognize it as money, in other words. The 7th characteristic was fungibility. This is also known as homogeneity and uniformity. Fungibility is the idea that it can be, I'll actually go to a definition of this. All portions or specimens of the substance used as money should be homogeneous, that is, of the same quality. So if you cut gold up into similar sizes, similar shapes, and similar pieces, they'll all be worth the same. That's what fungibility, homogeneity, and uniformity do for money. And then finally, the 8th characteristic, which wasn't agreed by everyone, but had 2 votes, was scarcity or limited supply. The idea here is that if something is generally available, it's not good money because everyone can get their hands on it. But if it's scarce, it would be good money because everyone would, it would be precious to everyone. And then it can't be diluted by someone finding a whole stockpile of that same stuff somewhere else. So we gave the example when I was doing the show. If acorns were money, anybody who had an oak tree in their backyard would destroy the money system because they'd bring a whole bunch of acorns and say, oh, yeah, this is more money. I just found it. But gold, it's being mined out of the earth, hard to get to, scarce. People can't artificially dilute the supply. That makes it better money. All right. Those were eight characteristics. 844-527-8723 is how you can call in here. If you'd like to email me, and I'll go check my email, david@tffco.com. Now, are there other characteristics that just didn't get enough votes? Well, there are eight other characteristics I found, and they only got one vote from the various experts I was polling. My experts were an economic discussions website. I looked at a former financial advisor's writings on the topic. I looked at, I'm going through these, Wikipedia. You got to go to Wikipedia these days. I went to a blogger. I called him Joe Blogger. And I looked at the St. Louis Fed's website. Those were my quote-unquote five experts. And between those five people, there were eight other characteristics, but the only one person of those five voted on it. So I didn't include them as being in the characteristics of true money. But I wanted to go through them, because I think it'll help us decide if these characteristics should be added or if they are just that, not really characteristics of money. So what are these eight characteristics that people are saying are part of money, but I'm debating the point? Number one, difficult to counterfeit. Is that necessary? I would give that kind of a plus, wouldn't you? If you have a type of money that could very easily be replicated and no one would know the difference, then I think you have probably pretty dangerous money, wouldn't you say? Because if this is generally accepted, if it's durable, if it's portable, if it's divisible, everyone thinks it's money because it's recognizable, et cetera, it has all the other characteristics, and you can replicate it very easily, I think that could destroy your money base rather quickly. So while this one did not get more than one vote, I think difficult to counterfeit, difficult to make into false money, probably would be something we'd want to consider as part of our money supply. The second one, let's do one more and then take a little break. The second characteristic that didn't make my final list, but let's consider it, is elasticity. Now, let me see if I can find who said elasticity as a topic. I'm going to read what he says, and then you tell me if you think, here it is, elasticity, it must be able to expand or contract as needed in the economy. Well, let me ask you something. If elasticity is a good component of money, doesn't it kind of get rid of the whole idea of scarcity? It sounds like he wants me to produce more or less depending on the commerce that's going on in society. And while many people argue that that's necessary, I say it's completely unnecessary. Why? Because if your money is divisible, you have automatic elasticity into smaller degrees as much as you want. You don't need to increase the money supply to handle more transactions. You can make your money worth more, meaning if there is more commerce going on with a limited supply of money, your money should become more valuable per unit. And then you just divide it into smaller units, and you can divide forever. Almost. I mean, I'm sure there's a point where gold, we wouldn't be cutting it. We'd have to cut it with a laser to be so small, maybe it'd be grains. We couldn't even carry it around. But you get the point. This is why pennies used to be worth so much. I was watching a show the other day, and the guy said he went out to dinner and brought the two-person family special. It was $2.75. you came and buy a drink for $2.75 today. But back in the day, money was worth more. Why? Because there was a limited supply. Goods and services being produced and increasing made every dollar worth more. Therefore, pennies became more valuable. And we could have done a half penny, and we could have done a quarter penny. So divisibility, to me, negates the idea of needing anything called elasticity. I hear some funky music in the background. Oh, yeah, you're listening to True Money Show. I am David Simpson, coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network Crusade Channel. You can call in if you'd like to ask a question. 844-527-8723. You may even answer my financial question today. Has the Fed ever printed money? When we come back, we'll answer that question. We'll finish what is true money and do a whole lot more on the Crusade Channel. King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers.